I do have a note of your date of birth, which is 1923, but what day and what month?
17th of June.
So that means you were smack bang at the beginning of the Great Depression.
Yes.
You were the second son of four sons.
That's right.
That was hard yakka for your parents.
It was hard work for them.
But one of the good things that appeared to me reading your book is that you were a great make-do-and-mend family, and that if there's something you wanted to do, you found the way to do it. And I believe the age of 13, you made a crystal set.
Correct.
Now that, for the listeners, is not a set of drinking glasses. What is it?
Well, it's a method of receiving radio, or wireless in those days. We only had three stations in Adelaide then, and they were easily picked up on a crystal set. I made my crystal set out of a matchbox.
Really?
Yes. And it was my own idea to change the channels. I just pulled the matchbox in and out, and I was able to get the three channels one at a time. Thought of that myself.
That's amazing. You obviously do have a skill, that a talent. And I also understand that your father insisted that you learn Morse code. What age was it?
About 13 or 14.
I look at it and it blurs in front of my eyes.
Well, Dad had four sons, and we all used to send Morse code at the table with a knife and a fork in that way, clicking like that. Mum could not understand it, but we could all talk to one another in it.
That would drive your mother absolutely mad.
Oh, well, she was a wonderful lady. Had to be to put up with us, the four boys.
You obviously did all the things that boys do when you were growing up with your brothers, and I imagine that some of them are unprintable.
Well, my younger brother and I used to work out all the naughty things, and the older one would say, no, you mustn't do that, Mum wouldn't like it.
But the Ballarat Baptist Church still managed to give you a small Bible.
Correct, which I used on my raids in my pocket. And that was for two purposes. Mainly, if I was shot down over Germany, I had a book to read. And secondly, that if a piece of shrapnel came towards my heart, the Bible was there. We were shot at every raid, but it didn't go through my heart.
I have heard of a lot of airmen putting a cigarette case in that pocket for that reason, but you didn't smoke, did you?
I never smoked. No.
And you didn't drink?
I didn't drink until I was about 30, mainly because I didn't want to. It was my beliefs, and I tried to be Christian all my life. It wasn't easy in the Air Force. I didn't know anybody else that was like me. I was so different. The aircrew used to go out after raids, come back and get plastered with alcohol. And I just sat in our cabin, or our Nissen hut, which I was pleased to be on my own, and I wrote letters to my wife, my fiancée then, and my mum and dad and all my relatives and friends with whom I stayed in America and England, because the English were very kind to us. They invited us into their homes, because we had nowhere, we were lost, and they were very kind to us. As long as we took our ration tickets, they were happy. The squadron was 149, and that's the one where the first Australian VC was awarded. A chap in about 1941, I wasn't even in the Air Force then. He flew Stirling into Italy. And on the way back, he was damaged. He could hardly see. And the plane was shot up. And he eventually got back to England. And he asked the crew to bail out over East Anglia. Two refused to go. So the three of them continued on with the plane. And the others jumped out. They never found the plane, never found the bodies. So he was awarded the VC for that. So I said that what I want is to get the RSL badge. It's a bit of a joke, you see. If we got that, we'd come back.
Can I take you back to how this path started? that after school you did a lot of electrical repair jobs when you were working for Lawrence and Hanson.
Correct.
So you added that to your Morse code.
Yes.
Now, I believe that in 1941, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, you rushed off and enlisted.
So did thousands of air crews, yeah.
Why did you choose the Air Force?
Well, there was a reason for that. My Christian beliefs led me to believe I couldn't shoot anybody. But being up in a bomber plane, I wouldn't know what was going on. That helped me no end with my beliefs. I probably killed a lot of people, but that I couldn't help that.
Yes, I do. I believe it must be very disturbing to think that you were, in fact, killing women and children as well as soldiers. But you managed to reconcile that. I believe you attended the trial of a conscientious objector.
At Tailem Bend.
At Tailem Bend, and you saw things through different eyes when you did
that. Yes, I did, because it took a lot of courage to stand up in court and say you wouldn't fight for your country. I was already in the Air Force then. I am on leave at Tailem Bend, where Dad was the postmaster.
Now, you started your training under the Empire Air Training Scheme, which was a British government initiative.
That's right, yes.
But you wanted to be a pilot. But because you did good Morse code and were good electrically, they decided, no, you couldn't be a pilot. They wanted you to be a wireless operator air gunner.
Correct, yes.
So you then went to start all this training to Victor Harbour.
Yes.
Tell me about your culinary delights of your first meal at Victor Harbour.
The first meal, we all lined up and the food was put in a bucket, a huge tub about 2 feet across, and they used a big shovel to get put a whop onto the plate. And when we sat down, the orderly officer came round. Any complaints? I said, yes, sir. What's the matter? I said, I got maggots in my meat. He said, go back and get another lot, which I did, and that was all right.
Well, that was disgusting.
Well, it was all part of life.
So, Doug, you applied yourself to your training and you finished second in your class.
Correct, yes.
But you missed out on a commission. How come?
Well, the commanding officer was a racing man and he had a lot of racehorses, Wing Commander Fairburn. And so he said to me, oh, you come from Tailem Bend. I said, I've never been there, but Dad's the postmaster. He said, they've got a race course there. I said, sir, I'm not interested in racing. That cost me the commission.
This was again because of your Christian beliefs.
That's right, yeah.
Your Christian beliefs certainly gave you a lot of hurdles to overcome along the way.
Yeah.
Good for you.
There's only one case in my life where I saw a man at night time in a hut kneeling at the side of the bed praying, and no one said anything. There were 24 of us in a hut, Nissen hut, in Ballarat. And I thought, what a brave man. I mean, much as I would like to have done it, I didn't. But I went to church at every available opportunity when they took us into Ballarat, and that's where I got the Bible.
I understand
that. They asked me, would you like to come out the front? Yes. Have you got a Bible? I said, no. Well, here's one. Thank you.
Do you still have it?
I still got it, yes.
What a treasure.
Well, it's only about that big, but it's got both testaments in it, the old and the new one. I could read it then, but now I can't even read it with the glasses on.
Your air gunner's course was in Sale, Victoria.
Yes, that's right.
You didn't really get an awfully good record there, did you?
3%. And the reason being, they said, well, we can't fail because we need you. So the next thing we went finished up in America.
But you had the skills they needed, didn't you?
Oh, yes,
you had more skills.
Well, I never fired a gun in the Air Force.
But you were in the bombers, so
that's
you
right.
Knew what was going on.
Yes, oh, yes.
Now, you were posted overseas in November 1943 to San Francisco.
Correct, on a ship.
You'd like to talk about that ship?
It was an American ship called the Lurline, which was a Matson line shipping, and it was a beautiful ship. It was only about 25,000 tonnes, a bit different to the ones that Laurel and I have used since. And we had to do, they expected the air crew, there were a lot of soldiers on there from England, going back to England after 9 years in India. And they said, you've got air crew, there's 114 of you. How's that from memory? He said, you've got to do 2 hours on watching for submarines and 6 hours off. And that ship, where they then said, you go down, have a meal. Well, it was like a hotel. It was an American ship. And they gave their troops the best of food. It was wonderful. That was 17 days, I think, from memory, of wonderful food. I never had food like that again, especially in other places, except in England, where when we did raids, we got the best food England had, because a lot of us didn't come back, so they had to give us something good.
And you had been through the Great Depression, so food was not plentiful then either.
We, with four sons and Dad only on a meagre salary, we didn't have much to eat.
But it set the pattern for a very slim figure of a man for the rest
of
your life.
That's right, yeah, so I never put any weight on since I was 18.
You spent some time in New York waiting for your next ship to the UK.
Yes.
You tell me about that time, because I understand you were able to follow some of your real loves like music.
Correct, yes. I went to the Metropolitan Opera to hear an opera that I'd never heard before, Rigoletto by Verdi. And they were the best singers in the world in it. And I can remember some of their names. Once Ezio Pinza, Lily Pons, Charles Coleman, and another man. I had to stand up for 3 hours, but it didn't cost me anything. Anyway, I had a lovely time there. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Just transported
you. Yeah, then I went to the Carnegie Hall, and that wonderful performance there. Wow, couldn't believe it. It was all free because I got tickets given to me when I was in the Air Force. By the one thing, I had no money. $1 a day didn't even cover one meal. We got accommodation for 10 cents a night in the Salvation Army. And that's where we slept. A lot of us had. We had no money. So walking down 6th Avenue, I saw a shop there, a bookshop. It says, servicemen, welcome. So I went in. Oh, what do you want, Aussie? Because we had Australia up here. I said, any chance of a job? He said, why? I said, I haven't got any money. He said, you sign this receipt and they'll give you $20. I said, I don't want that sort of money. I want to work for it. He said, when can you start? I said, now. He said, well, will $1 an hour be all right? I said, yes, that's good. Instead of $1 a day. And that was a wonderful experience for me to go to the bookshops and go and visit the places. I went to a place called Stephen Clark, I think his name, a wealthy man. And he had these wonderful paintings. As I walked into his, I knocked on the door and the butler came out. He said, oh, come in, Aussie, because they rang him, phoned him and said, oh, I was coming. So I went in and he said, what do you got? I said, some books for Mr. Clark. He said, oh, come in. And I'm walking in this passageway, it was nearly half the width of this, and there's these big paintings, Van Gogh and all the great artists that I'd heard about but never seen them before. And they, when he came back, he said, here's a silver dollar, Aussie. And I said, wow, that's the tip. That was the good thing. And I said, are they original? She said, of course they are. Now, you wouldn't believe it. Laurel and I went there to the Metropolitan Museum of Art about 20 years ago. And there's his name up there, Stephen Clark, whatever it was. We're going there. There's all these same paintings as I. So he gave the lot to the art gallery there. And, he had a lot of money. So that was something that I...
Amazing experience, yes. Yes. Now, you eventually did get the next ship to the UK. Tell us about that ship.
Oh, it was terrible. It was due to be scrapped in 1939. It was the Mary, which is in the Bible, but they couldn't scrap it. It was only designed for 600 passengers, but they put 7,500 troops on it. The Americans had to sleep up and down the staircase. Can you imagine sleeping on a staircase like that? And then the alleyways. And we had about 16 to a cabin that was supposed to have two in it. At least we had somewhere to sleep. And there was only two meals a day. It took 4 hours to eat. And because I think I mentioned in my book that I had nothing to eat, and I got hungry, and I said to one of the sailors on board, I said, "Is there a cafe on the board?" He said, "Cut it out." I said, "Warship." I said, "Oh." He said, "Why?" I said, "I'm hungry." He said, "Follow me." Well, that was the beginning of my first lot of smuggling. He said to me after 3-4 days, "You got any room in your kit bag?" They call them kit bag, these canvas ones. I said, "Plenty." I picked one up in New York and it's empty. So he said, "How many can you get in?" I said, "Let's try it." Well, then I said, "We have got to put socks around it and underwear," which we did. And I must have been 20, 30 cartons in there. They only allowed one carton each. So I gave him his mum's address in Liverpool and the money to get there, and off I went. And he was there waiting. I gave him to him. That's the only time I smuggled in my life, and I reckon it was justified.
Well, yes, you were hungry, weren't you?
I was hungry. Yeah, I wasn't the only one that got the food.
So eventually, after this nightmare journey...
It was terrible, yeah.
You arrived in the UK.
In Liverpool.
In Liverpool, which is not exactly the beautiful capital of the country.
No.
And you were stationed in 13 different places England.
Yes.
Because there were 155 Bomber Command airfields.
You got the figures right, haven't you?
Well, I was brought up in, it was called Huntingdon, that county then. Yeah. It's now been merged with Cambridge. And the airfields that I cycled to and around were Upwood, Brampton, which was American, and Witten. They were all arable land which had been made over into airfields.
Yeah, that's right.
So I was quite used to these ugly big bombers.
Yes, what an experience to think you've been through it.
Well, not really, but only the aftermath,
not
the war itself.
You wouldn't be old enough for that.
Thank you. So you continued your training in Wellingtons, but not in Lancasters, because they weren't going to let you have Lancasters to get your hands on.
But before that, they put us on other smaller aircraft, and there's the photos are in my book, and I can't remember them all now.
No. And that training really set you up?
Oh, it was important, because they had to do flights for navigation and for radio contact, for wireless contact, because we didn't have very good radios. Well, they were good radios, the best they had.
You had the opportunity while you were in England of visiting London. What did you think of London?
Well, the worst part was trying to get there by the underground, and the smell in there was awful because people slept in there overnight for the bombing raids, and the air conditioning wasn't too good. So wonder I didn't get sick, but I didn't. I was tough as boot leather in those days.
You can hear the full interview with Fiona White and Doug Leake at Radio Adelaide's website. Just Google Radio Adelaide Doug Leake, and that's spelled L-E-A-K.